Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
Well, it's Christmas time, and if you could ask God for any one thing that he would do in the church, one major thing that he would do for all of God's people in America, what would it be?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
I'm sitting here in the Truth Booth. Yes, the very Truth Booth in the main Truth headquarters in Winston-Salem. Instead of my normal hidden location, somewhere outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, but it is the same me, Michael Brown, coming away live today. Delighted to be with you as we put our finger on some of the key issues facing the church today and ask the question, boy, if we could just kind of snap our fingers and make one thing, just something happen that would change it all. If you could ask God to do one specific thing for the body of Christ in America, what would it be? We'll talk about it today, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, or online, Facebook page is Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown. I'm also going to read to you a letter that was sent to me by a colleague from a gay officer, a gay sergeant in Iraq, writing now after the Senate has moved to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and President Obama signed it. I want to ask how you would respond to this gentleman. I'll read his letter to you shortly. Okay, you know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, that we burn day and night with moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. We understand that if society is going to change, if things are going to change in the world, the change first has to come in the church. When I go into a hotel room, check in at night, flip the switch on, and the light doesn't come on, I don't get upset with the darkness. The darkness is doing what it always does. My question is, what's wrong with the light? Or am I hitting the wrong switch? Or is the light bulb out? That's what I'm wondering about. So the problem in America is not wicked people doing wicked things. Worldly people are going to do worldly things. Have you ever seen a bird fly? Have you ever seen a fish swim? Well, worldly people do worldly things. It is the nature of sinners to sin. The problem in America is not so much worldly people doing worldly things, wicked people doing wicked things, but the church of Jesus not living as God has called us to live. That's been a burden deeper than my heart for many years, that we would be revived, that we would be renewed from the leadership through the entire body, and that that renewal would affect the culture. Now, George Barna, famous for his surveys, often considered to be the most quoted modern Christian leader because he's constantly putting out data about where the church is at. He will often, through his analyses, his polls, his statistical studies, he will often tell us what we've known in our gut was happening, but we don't have the ability to survey tens of thousands of people all over America all the time. He'll do it, and then he'll come back with the data scientifically done and tell us the state of things in the body. Those of us, those of you who have been burdened, who have been sounding the alarm, who have felt something was wrong maybe for a year, maybe for 10 years, maybe for 20 years, maybe for 30 years. You've known something was wrong. You felt acutely something was wrong. Barna's latest data really helps us put the finger on some of the key problem areas. And since this is the easier part. The easier part is to identify what's wrong. You go to a doctor, he checks you out, you have this condition. The harder part is to get a cure. The harder part is to figure out how to get things in the right direction. Hence my question at the beginning of the show, and Nancy and I were talking about it before I left today for the Truth Radio Network Christmas party and then to come over here to do the broadcast. I asked her, okay, if there's one thing, you can ask God to do just one thing for believers in America, what would that one thing be? I mean, would it be that suddenly people were in love with the Word? Would it be that suddenly they had a burden for the lost? Would it be that suddenly they had a revelation of what the church really was? Would it be that suddenly they were empowered to live holy? What would it be if there was any one thing? I'll tell you what was on my mind a little bit later. But here's what Barna said December 13th. He said, change usually happens slowly in the church. This is six mega themes emerging from the Barna Group research in 2010. But he said, a review of the past year's research conducted by the Barna Group provides a time-lapse portrayal of how the religious environment in the U.S. is morphing into something new, and may I add in, something bad. And this is no surprise. I mean, you go into the doctor's office, you're hurting from head to toe, you can barely stand, you can barely breathe, you got sores and welts popping up all over your body, and the doctor says, you're sick. Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you for the news, sir. So, yes, the fact that things are morphing into something new and that new is not good, that's not news. But the breakdown here is very useful. Barna's group says, analyzing insights drawn from more than 5,000 non-proprietary interviews conducted over the past 11 months, George Barna indicated that the following patterns were evident in the survey findings. And he lists six. I'm going to go through these today on the air with you and then tell you clearly what some of the antidotes are, what some of the answers are, what must change if we're to get back on track. But let me start here. For you that are in a wonderfully healthy fellowship, be it a mega church, be it a house group, or somewhere in between, and everything in your body has the signs of life, talking about the spiritual body you're part of. There's passion for Jesus. There's hunger for the word. There's holy living. There's reaching out to the lost. There's helping the poor and the needy. There's standing up for what's right. There's sending out missionaries. There's heart for Israel. There's so much. There's wonderful worship, deep life of prayer. If that's the environment that you're in, unfortunately, that's the exception to the rule in America. Unfortunately, that's rare. Unfortunately, that is not the norm of what is happening. That is not the norm of what is happening in churches all over America. Let me also say this. It's easy to deceive ourselves. Self-deception is easy. That's why the word often exhorts us, like James, the first chapter, to be hearers of the word and doers, not just hearers. If we're going to hear it, let's do it. Otherwise, we can deceive ourselves by being hearers only. That's why Paul would write often to Ephesians and Corinthians, others said, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. That's why Jesus could speak to the church in Sardis in Revelation 3 and said, you have a reputation for being alive, and yet you're dead. That's why he could say to Laodicea, you save yourselves. I'm rich, increased in wealth, have need of nothing. Don't realize you're wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. It's possible for us to be so used to the environment that we're in, so used to the setting that we're in, so used to the condition of the church around us that we really lose sight of reality. Come on, if everyone in your family, say, is 6 foot eight or taller, then to you being short in your family is 6 foot six. You know, what happened? That person's only 6 foot six. And to be like 5 foot eight, almost being like a midget. It's relative. You get used to certain things. We get used to Christian culture in America. We get used to the way we hear things on the airwaves and see them on TV and hear them preach from pulpits and read in Christian books. And we see the condition of believers around us. And often we can think it's normal, whereas it's so far off. Leonard Ravenhill used to say the church has been subnormal for so long that when it finally becomes normal, everyone thinks it's abnormal. Or as Watchman Nee, who said, by the time the average Christian gets his temperature up to normal, everybody thinks he's got a fever. So here's the Barna Group analysis putting together their research from 2010. Are you ready for point number one? What do you think it is? What do you think is the first thing in their analysis of something wrong with the church, a development in the church for the negative? What do you think it is? Number one, the Christian church is becoming less theologically literate. Again, for some, it's like, that's news? But Barna's brought it out clearly through the interviews, through the surveys. The Christian church is becoming less theologically literate. What used to be basic, universally known truths about Christianity are now unknown mysteries to a large and growing share of Americans, especially young adults. For instance, Barna Group studies in 2010 showed that while most people regard Easter as a religious holiday, only a minority of adults associate Easter with the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Okay, I want to tell you something honestly. I knew things were really bad. I knew that there's a lot of theological literacy. I know that things that are foundational doctrines in certain circles now are up for grabs. There's all kinds of confusion on the fundamentals of the faith. But even that, I should say, even I am surprised to hear that. Only a minority of adults associate Easter with the resurrection of Jesus? You got to be kidding me. Other examples include the finding that few adults believe that their faith is meant to be the focal point of their life or to be integrated into every aspect of their existence. The theological free-for-all that is encroaching in Protestant churches nationwide suggests the coming decade will be a time of unparalleled theological diversity and inconsistency, or confusion, ignorance, backsliding. Why do you think there is so much moral confusion in America? Why do you think your average American is so confused about the gospel? Because so much of the church is. You got to hear the next five and a letter from a gay sergeant in Iraq you don't want to miss. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Reading through Barna's six mega themes emerging from Barna Group research in 2010 with some very, very disturbing, alarming things. Friends, more of the same will only produce more of the same. If we think that things will just change on their own, they won't. We've got to address the problem. But by God's grace, there are solutions. I am encouraged, not discouraged, because Jesus is Lord. To weigh in, 866-34-TRUTH online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire to catch up with past shows and to get into today's discussion. And again, if you could ask the Lord to do any one thing, just one thing, for the church in America, what would that one thing be? If you just could ask one request, and it's not generic, God, do everything that needs to be done. One specific thing. It may be the key for your own life. What I say would be great for everyone might be the key for me individually, and perhaps if the fire can burn more brightly in my life, in your life, it can burn brightly, more brightly in another 5 or 10 or 100 or 1,000 or who knows how many lives can be touched. Before I go on reading and interacting with the Barna survey, again, some very important data, I want to read to you something that was forwarded to me by a friend of mine in family ministry, and he received this letter from a sergeant, purportedly a gay sergeant in Iraq, and sent it out to me and some others saying, how would you respond to this? I wrote back how I would respond, but tell me how you'd respond to this, all right? Before I go back to Barna, hello, so-and-so. Until now, sending an email like this would have been too risky. But as you know, things have now changed. We are a group of soldiers currently stationed in Iraq who happen to be gay. We all love our country, and we fight to defend its constitution. It's been a difficult time for gay soldiers. We are fighting and dying, battling America's enemies abroad, but at the same time, we have Americans like you who spit on our sacrifice, who demonize us, and who fail to recognize that when we die in combat, it's defending all Americans, including people like you. If you would like to develop some character, consider joining the military yourself. Do you really think that your children respect a man who makes a living of conning little old ladies out of part of their Social Security checks to fund your, quote, career? You are a disgrace and an insult to the Christian faith, Sergeant so-and-so signs his name, presumably a real thing from a real letter, a real person writing, real gay soldier writing from Iraq, not just someone that's claiming to be this person. How would you respond to that? You get a letter like that, you're in ministry, you're in full-time family ministry. How would you respond to a letter like that? What would you tell that person? 866-34-TRUTH. I don't want to forget this. Joey, this is important. I don't want to forget this. We one of the questions last week prompted me to do a little discussion about alien abductions. And did you believe in these things? And what, you know, is it demons behind it? Or what? Is it just hallucinations or whatever? Well, I found out something fascinating. On our Facebook page, because I'm administrator of it, I can look at it and see for each show or each topic I put up how many impressions there were, how many people stopped and read it, looked at it, whatever. And the numbers tend to be fairly consistent, except the one about alien abductions was 10 times the amount as the others. Is it that people were more interested in that? No, I think it was aliens were checking in. I think that's what it was. I think they were. Okay, I'm joking, but it did get my attention. All right, back to Barna's mega themes. Number one, the Christian church is becoming less theologically illiterate. He sounds this warning, the theological free-for-all that is encroaching in Protestant churches nationwide suggests the coming decade will be a time of unparalleled theological diversity and inconsistency. I'm all for questions. I'm all for questions being asked. I'm all for people saying, okay, I've heard this was taught, this about Jesus, or that he died for our sins, that he's the only way, or that he rose from the dead, or that there's going to be a future judgment, or the Trinity, or that Jewish people need Jesus to be saved. I've heard, or the Bible's infallible. But how do we know that? Do we really know that? I'm all for people asking questions. I've got no problem with people asking questions whatsoever. But it's when things that are foundational get questioned and solid biblical answers aren't there anymore, or solid biblical answers don't satisfy because people have lost touch with the foundation so deeply, that concerns me. Okay, number two point from Barna. Christians are becoming more ingrown and less outreach-oriented. Why would that be? What, come on, let's think about this together. Why would this be? We have first point, Christian churches becoming less theologically literate. Second point, Christians are becoming more ingrown and less outreach-oriented. Why would that be a logical thing that would grow out of theological illiteracy and other areas of backsliding in the church? Why would it just be a natural consequence that the church would now be more ingrown, less outreach-oriented? Could it be because they don't recognize people are lost anymore? Could it be if there's no more absolute truth, then, hey, you have your truth, I have my truth? Could it be that there's not a burden for lost people for these very reasons? Could it be that people are not clearly plugged into Jesus enough that out of that they have something to actually share? I mean, there's so many logical reasons for this to be the case. Christians becoming more ingrown, less outreach-oriented. This is serious. This is the guaranteed way for deeper backsliding when you go inward instead of outward. Backsliding sets in. All right, let me grab a call before I go on further, because I could go the whole show in about 20 shows talking about this, because these things are near and dear to me. But let me try to get to the phones first. Philip in Durham, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. So what's your take on the reason for spiritual decline these days?
Well, yeah, I think, and thanks, by the way, for taking the call, but I think there's been a decline on affirming absolute truth. I think there are many churches that I think you can see this with the emergent church and many others that are taking an ambiguous stance when it comes to the script. Well, we just can't really know where to stand on these issues, or we can't really know what they intended to write in the scriptures themselves. So homosexuality is fine. Gay pastors, that's fine. It doesn't really matter. Let's be all inclusive. And mm-hmm. So I think there is, in the face of a war, and a lot of people see it as a religious war, the response, I think, is let's just kind of hug the world theologically and not really stir the nest up. Let's just be kind of men pleasers, and let's try to get as many people in the world into the church. Let's not really stand for truth, and let's not stand on toes when we're preaching. And so, on that basis, on that presupposition of let's just kind of mimic the world, let's kind of look like the world, let's dress down, let's just try to get them in here, and then once we get them in here, let's not try to offend them by standing for the truth. But the truth has always divided. Christ said, "I didn't come to bring peace; I came to bring a sword." He's not talking about a warlike effort, but the truth divides.
Yeah,
people are tired of that.
Yeah, let me just jump in because we got a break. Philip, you're 100% right. All the things you said are right on. And in point of fact, if we become like the world to win the world, then we have nothing to win the world too. It's by our being distinct in Jesus, standing out, living in the light, that there's hope for the world. Friends, we must we must wake up to reality. There are wonderful solutions, but we must first recognize the problems. Back with much more. Welcome back to the Line of Fire, Michael Brown. Thank you for joining us today. It is always a delight and a privilege to share this time together with you. We're talking about Barna's end-of-the-year statement, six mega-themes emerging from Barna Research in 2010, which is a clear wake-up call for the church. If you'd like to call in with your comments, thoughts, 866-34-TRUTH, online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. There's also a link to the Barna survey. Look, as human beings, we like to be encouraged. As human beings, we like to hear things positive. As human beings, we like someone to tell us what's right and what we're doing well and that we're appreciated. And often we don't like to hear something negative. We don't like to hear something wrong. But if it's truth, it's for our good. I would rather that someone came up to me and spoke the truth in love than that they said, and it was hard to hear. I would rather that they did that than stroke me with all kinds of false things. Come on, let's just say that your diet and lifestyle are going to get you in an early grave. And someone that really loves you tells you, you got to change. You know, you're 400 pounds overweight. You almost collapse when you get out of the bed to walk to the bathroom. You're going to kill yourself. You need to make radical changes in your diet and lifestyle. However I can help you, I'm here to help you. That's a gift from God when someone speaks that to you. When someone else just says, you can't listen to those doctors. What's this? Come on, doesn't really matter. Just don't worry about it. You're doing great. You're looking great. I think you're in better shape than you've ever been. You're doing great. That person is not helping you. They're hurting you. Open rebuke is better than secret love. Proverbs 27. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. The kisses of an enemy may be profuse, but faithful are the wounds of a friend. These are friendly words from the folks at Barna today. Number one, the Christian church is becoming less theologically literate. Number two, Christians are becoming more ingrown and less outreach-oriented, which is only a natural. If you don't have absolute truth anymore, why would you be reaching out? Reaching out is difficult. Reaching out gets you excluded. Saying there's only one way gets you called bigoted and intolerant. I read a quote from John Warwick Montgomery, who said that when he's spoken on college campuses and other places, he's realized now that judging someone for doing evil is considered worse than doing evil. Things are so absolutely skewed, and the word inclusion and diversity means anything but. In other words, you do it our way, my way, or the highway. That's what diversity means. If you don't embrace the liberal, politically correct stance of the world and much of the church today, then you're out. You're out. I'll tell you more about that. I'll tell you a little more in the program. My amazing correspondence with a local company. Number three, growing numbers of people are less interested in spiritual principles and more desirous of learning pragmatic solutions for life. When asked what matters most, teenagers prioritize education, career development, friendships, and travel. Faith is significant to them, but it takes a backseat to life accomplishments and is not necessarily perceived to affect their ability to achieve their dreams. So in other words, we don't need to preach the truth to people and preach basic principles of spiritual life. We need to have a how-to gospel, how to have a successful life, how to run a successful business, how to be a good parent, how to do well in school, how to make friends, how to have influence. Now, look, God's word is very practical. There's plenty of practical wisdom in God's word. And good teaching, good preaching will give us the necessary tools to implement the truths that we believe in. We have certain family values. We have certain spiritual values. We have certain moral values. How do we live those things out? Well, the word of God, good teaching, preaching will help equip us to do these things effectively. But the gospel is not simply a how-to manual for a good life, for a successful life. It may end you up in prison for the faith. You may end up being martyred for the faith. You may end up losing everything you have for the faith and have treasure in heaven. You may have people turn against you, no matter how loving and gracious and kind and Christ-like that you are. That's reality, friends. That is reality. So here's where a lot of pastors and teachers miss it. And please, brothers, sisters, if you're listening to me, and you're in the ministry of teaching, preaching the word. I'm talking to you as a friend. I've been preaching since 1973. I love God's people. I love the church, and I speak these things as a friend, all right? We have fallen into the mentality of, well, people won't listen to me unless I just give the practical how-to stuff. So instead of exalting Jesus and calling people to repent and calling people to deepen their prayer lives and encouraging people to share their faith and minister to hurting and needy and whatever else comes out of the gospel and be worshipers and so on, we just want to tell them, okay, here's how you operate your finances. Oh, okay, that has a place, but that is not the primary message that we're to be bringing, or how to be positive, or how to be nice, or whatever it is. So we get people to listen to us, but we water the thing down to the point that it's hardly the gospel anymore, and it's certainly not the heart of the gospel. I'll write a book, and a publisher will say to me, well, okay, well, what you need is kind of like the practical. What felt need is this missing? It's this meeting, rather. You know, what's the felt need? It was like, how about the truth? How about showing people they have a need they don't know they need? How about that? All right. Number four, among Christians, interest in participating in community action is escalating. Largely driven by the passion and energy of young adults, Christians are more open to and more involved in community service activities than has been true in the recent past. Now, this does not mean standing up for righteousness. This does not mean primarily ministering in front of an abortion clinic or tackling gay activism or other things like that. What it primarily means is doing good to those in need. Now look. That is great if it's based on love for God, which then leads to love for neighbor. It's not great if it's primarily social as a result of people not being properly connected with Jesus. You see, there's a difference. Our community action, our social action should flow out of relationship with Jesus and the teaching of the word that gives us a heart of compassion to touch people, not simply that we care. Caring is important, but this could just be another social action thing, just like a liberal social action gospel of a couple generations ago that misses the whole point and doesn't even think of ever evangelizing. Number five, the postmodern insistence on tolerance is winning over the Christian church. This pushes too many buttons for me. The postmodern insistence on tolerance is winning over the Christian church. And it's anything but tolerance. It's utterly intolerant. I was talking to a friend of mine who is a mega church pastor. He has a church of over 6,000 people in a leading city in America. His number one value is discipleship, and he's very strong in interracial ministry, multiracial ministry. And he stands up for sexual purity. He'll speak out about homosexuality at the same time, reaching out to many people in his city and community that are homosexual men and women. He told me of the mega church pastors he knows in his city, and he meets with quite a number of them. Not a single one of them will address the issue of homosexuality. Zero. None of them will talk about it because they don't want to lose members. You lose members, you lose money. You know what happens. You've got to be tolerant. You've got to be tolerant. Diversity. In other words, accept everything except the truth of Scripture. Accept everything except biblical standards. Accept everything except what God says is important. You talk about in the schools, GLSEN, Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. And of course, I'm talking about these things because I've focused on studying this for some years and writing my book, Queer Thing Happened to America. You go in the schools, you can give kids all kinds of information about coming out and being gay, et cetera, et cetera. You bring in someone with an ex-gay message and say you can come out of homosexuality? No! You can't come our way. Why? Because we're tolerant. Back with more. And I'm going to share my experiences with US Airways and Caribou Coffee. You don't want to miss it. Well, I'm looking at my watch here and thinking, I need about like 3 more hours. We've got 15 minutes, but we'll do our best to say what we need to say. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Or online, askdrbrown.org. I've been reading excerpts from George Barna's survey, end of the year, gathering of information, reflecting on what they've looked at, interviews they've done, etc. Come up with 6 mega themes in the church. Bad news, very bad news, but good news because it tells us what we need to do. Number one, the Christian church is becoming less theologically literate. Number two, Christians are becoming more ingrown, less outreach-oriented. Number three, growing numbers of people are less interested in spiritual principles, more desirous of learning pragmatic solutions for life. Number four, among Christians, interest in participating in community action is escalating. Good point, but I'm concerned it's escalating for wrong reasons. Number five, the postmodern insistence on tolerance is winning over the Christian church. Number six, the influence of Christianity on culture and individual lives is largely invisible. How about repeating that one out loud with me so it sinks in? Friends, this is reality today in America. We need to wake up to this so that we can take hold of God. And I'll give you my answer in terms of a question I posed at the beginning of the show. If you could push a button and God could do any one thing for the church in America today, what would it be? I'll answer that for you, my perspective. But let's say this out loud together. The influence of Christianity on culture and individual lives is largely invisible, speaking in America today. Christianity has arguably added more value to American culture than any religion, philosophy, ideology, or community. Yet contemporary Americans are hard-pressed to identify any specific value added, partly due to the nature of today's media. They have no problem identifying the faults of the churches and Christian people, but you have to say, are we really different than the world? How different are we? Are we different in a way that's actually bringing about change? Are we bringing light into darkness? Are we bringing truth into places of error? Are we bringing transformation? Are we really making a difference? I've asked the question. Nancy and I were chatting about it before leaving the house today. Okay, if there's just one thing, you can only put your finger on one thing and ask God to do that one thing in the church, what would it be? And it all is going to come from our different perspectives, the things that we're closest to, the greatest needs that we see. And you might have 100 answers that are all good. But for me, the number one thing would be this. Number one thing would be a fresh encounter with Jesus. A fresh encounter with Jesus. If we really encountered him afresh and he became our all in all, our perspective would change so radically. Our hunger for the word, our love for truth, our burden for the lost, our difference-making in society, everything would change. We'd be drawn in to know him, to walk with him, to make him known, a fresh encounter with Jesus. Perhaps each of us in our own lives should say, Lord, I've got to know you like I've never known you before. I've got to walk with you like I've never walked with you before. I've got to experience you like I never have before so I can make you known to this dying world. I told you I'd share some experiences I had. These are all recounted in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. There's one chapter dealing with the subject of, quote, diversity, especially in the workplace. When I found out that U.S. Airways and Caribou Coffee were becoming sponsors of the Gay Pride event in Charlotte, I wrote to each of them a few years back now. And I wrote to customer relations online through U.S. Airways. And I just said, look, we're not talking about treating people fairly. Of course we believe in treating everyone fairly. And I'm sure on many flights I've been served by gays and lesbians working with U.S. Air. That's not my issue. My issue is U.S. Airways taking a controversial stand, backing something in the community that is divisive, etc., and that sends out a message that many would differ with morally. So they wrote back. Someone from the diversity office wrote back and said, oh, actually, we have so many thousands of employees. We show solidarity with them and their community involvement. This is just one way. So I wrote back and said, you know, I'd really like to talk face-to-face or by phone, and I'd like to send you pictures of what happens at some of these events. But just do me this favor as well. I had three requests. The third was, can you just give me a list of, like, pro-life things you've done? Or just a few things, pro-family things that you've sponsored in Charlotte. Because I'd like to know, because certainly that's important to your community. And write no response to that. So I write back that, well, you can share the email that I wrote. I said, well, so I'm assuming then that you're saying, no, you won't meet with me face to face. You don't want to receive the pictures of what's happened at these previous events. And you have no list of other events that you sponsored that would be, you know, moral, family, etc. They said, wrote back, don't make any assumptions. I said, okay. So I'm hoping I'm wrong, but if I don't hear from you, then I'll understand your answer is no to each of the following. And what was the response? No response. What are they going to say? Because it's not diversity. It's exclusivity. Then with Caribou Coffee, the same deal. They wrote back and they said, hey, look, standing with the Gay Pride events, that's just a way of showing solidarity with the people in our community. I said, okay, we're having this event. Will you stand with us? They said, no, because we're inclusive. I have in writing. I kid you not. We get back my answer to a gay soldier in Iraq. All right, before I give you my response to a gay soldier in Iraq that wrote to a friend of mine, a very scathing email, a friend of mine in family ministry, before I give you my response to that and my bottom line for today, let me go to the phones and grab one more call. Danita in Pensacola, thanks for calling. And I recognize the name, one of our grads. Yes, nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you, too. Dr. Brown, you know, I read the report, and it's just really sad. And as a fire grad, you know, is there anything that you can tell us that are practical ways that we can embody, you know, what it means to have revolution in the church and how we can, you know, show the truth of God's love and the transformation power in our own communities and in as the body?
Got it. All right. Tell you what, keep listening, and I will address those things before we're out of here. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Blessed holidays, Christmas, New Year to you.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. If you've never read my book, Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call for Radical Change, or my book, How Saved Are We?, I'd strongly recommend those. You can get them on our website, askdrbrown.org. Just click on the online bookstore. How Saved Are We? Revolution in the Church, two books that will address these things head on. Before I respond to Danita's question, which ties in with my bottom line, I read earlier in the broadcast an email from a sergeant in Iraq, says, hey, part of a group of soldiers currently stationed in Iraq, happen to be gay, basically saying we're risking our lives for people like you, family activists that stand against us, etc., and you're bigoted and you're making all this money and you need to wake up. Well, here's how I'd respond to this. First, I tell this guy how deeply I appreciate his willingness to sacrifice for my freedoms, how deeply I appreciate him and every other soldier, gay or straight, serving anywhere in the world, fighting for our country, fighting for our liberties. I would bless him for that service. I would also tell him if I was making the kind of money that he thought I was making, I would send it to veterans and people in need. We had a board meeting. We were reviewing our ministry finances, and someone on the board looked at a salary total and said, is that my salary? Because it's way too low. If it is, I said, no, that's the combined salary of our entire staff. But that being said, I would also ask this question, do you think it's possible to have any moral objection to homosexuality? Is it possible that there can be any moral objection? Because there again, you have the intolerance of tolerance. You must accept everything except truth. You must accept everything except that which goes against what we believe or what we practice. All right, bottom line, what do we do? Things really are bad. We really are in a crisis state. Jesus is not in a crisis. He's building his church worldwide. But we are in a crisis of truth, a crisis of spirituality, a crisis of living out the faith here in America. What must we do practically? First, I'm going to be a broken record on this. Everybody, back to the basics. Pastors, teachers, leaders, those with house group meetings, every believer, back to the basics. Get your own life in sterling order in the sight of God. Get your own fire burning brightly. Press into the Lord in a quality way. Ask him to remove the distractions, to take away the blinders, to get you focused on what really matters. Give yourself to prayer. Give yourself to the word. Give yourself to fasting. Give yourself to sharing the gospel. Give yourself to worship, to getting built up in God, fellowshipping with others. Focus on what really matters. That's the first thing. And then secondly, begin to prune away everything else that's non-essential. Church, ministry, life, the things you are doing that are non-essential, that are sapping your time, that are sapping your energy, that are distracting you, that are diluting you, that are polluting you, prune them away so that you have time for what matters most in terms of personal spiritual renewal. Act as if either God moves and God comes through or we have lost an entire generation. And the church in America is something that just becomes a memory. It's happened in other countries. It can happen here if not for the grace of God. Major on the majors and look at the word ruthlessly and say, okay, whatever changes we need to make so as to live this thing out, we're going to do them. God will give wisdom. God will give guns. And I will have far more to say about this in the coming days and weeks. AskDrBrown.org. Go to the line of fire.